following podcast is brought to you exclusively by the R&R Podcast Network.
Brett made a very, very selfish decision. Brett's going to have to live with that for the rest of his life. Brett screwed Brett. I have no sympathy whatsoever for Brett.
Those words were very, very telling from the owner of the WWF back in 1997 after the infamous Montreal Screwjob.
Welcome to RTW Rewind. Red Rob will take you on a journey through time to relive some of the greatest moments, matches, and personalities from the sport of professional wrestling. Now, here's your host of the show, Red Rob, Rob Francois.
Welcome back to RTW Rewind. My name is Red Rob, Rob Francois. I am your humble host for this show, and I hope everybody is doing well all around the world. Continuing my chronicle of Shawn Michaels, my most favorite wrestler of all time. How could you talk about Shawn Michaels and not talk about what happened between Shawn and Brett at Survivor Series 1997 and what has been known as the Montreal Screwjob? From my perspective, it was one of the craziest things I had ever seen. Just to give you a little bit of backstory of where I was, I'll never forget where I was when I watched this. I was down the street at my friend Eric's house. His parents let him get the pay-per-view. And we didn't expect anything to happen. We figured Shawn and Brett would be a fantastic match. Their WrestleMania 12 match was amazing. The build-up all summer long to this match was incredible, including Shawn Michaels guest refereeing the match between Brett and The Undertaker, in which Shawn tried to hit Brett with a chair and hit Taker instead and had to begrudgingly count three on The Undertaker, essentially letting Brett defend his WWF title. You had Brett in the wheelchair that year. Shawn super kicking him out of his wheelchair. There was so much good stuff between DX and the Hart Foundation. Bret Hart being loved in Canada, but being absolutely hated everywhere in the States was pretty surreal and something you'll probably never, ever see again. There was a backstage fight between the two in Hartford, Connecticut, before Raw, which prompted both men getting sent home and not being on that show. It was crazy. And I'm sure a lot of the boys stirred the shit up. I don't think it was that bad between Shawn and Brett, but I think there's a lot of shit stirs in the background that probably made it worse, that being the members of the clique. There was a tremendous amount of heat between Shawn Michaels and Bret Hart. There's no doubt about that. Shawn making a comment on Raw about Brett seeing sunny days ahead, implying that Brett had relations with Sonny, Tammy Sitch. That didn't help things at all. And supposedly, that was, according to Shawn, that was cleared ahead of time, but Brett took exception with it. I don't know. It just depends on he said, he said. Who you want to believe on that one? So the build-up and the rivalry was amazing leading up to Survivor Series 1997. The event was held on November 9th, 1997, at the Molson Center in Montreal, Quebec, Canada. As I mentioned, I was down the street from where I lived, about a mile down the road at my friend Eric's house. We expected a fantastic main event. We had no idea what was yet to come. And watching the match, and the rest of the pay-per-view was all right. I mean, nobody really remembers the undercard, right? Not that much. I remember there being like a gang rules. There were so many factions back then. I mean, you had the Truth Commission led by the Jackal, also known as Cyrus, also known as Don Callis, who does TV for TNA Impact right now. You had the DOA, the Disciples of Apocalypse. You had the Heart Foundation. You had Los Boricuas. So many factions during that time. I mean, if you weren't in a faction back then, you weren't cool. Nation of Domination. Even the Legion of Doom had three members, so they could have been considered a faction back then. But nobody really remembers the undercard that much. I mean, Stone Cold went against Owen Hart. I totally forgot that they wrestled. In any event, what we all had come to see was Shawn Michaels versus Bret Hart. When that match started, it was hot, man. It was, most of the action took place out of the ring before the bell even rang. They just beat the living crap out of each other. And when the bell finally rang, they started to really get into it. And everybody remembers the finish. Bret Hart getting put in his own move. Shawn Michaels applying the sharpshooter onto Bret. Bret was, it looked like he was trying to counter it. And all of a sudden, Earl Hebner, the referee, rings the bell. Shawn's music plays. Bret stands up like, you son of a bitch. Almost like he knew. And we're like, what? What the hell just happened? We're looking at each other like, what the hell just happened? We had no idea what was going on. And the title gets handed to Shawn. I believe it was Jerry Briscoe and possibly Pat Patterson that grabbed Shawn and walked him down the aisle. And the last thing we saw was Shawn Michaels holding up the belt for a second real quick and then walking back to the aisle. And it just ended abruptly. And we looked at each other like, what? What the hell just happened?
RTW Rewind.
Little did we know that Bret Hart had a camera crew following him for the last couple of months during this time and was filming a documentary, which ended up being Wrestling with Shadows. It chronicled Bret's decision to leave the WWF and had private conversations that we were never privy to before between him and WCW officials. I'm assuming Eric Bischoff. A conversation between Bret and Vince. Bret being offered like a 20-year deal or something like that. And then Vince calling back and saying that he couldn't afford to pay Bret and had to cancel the deal. And supposedly told Bret that he should do what's best for his family, and he thinks it's a good decision to leave and go to WCW. So, I mean, Vince knew he was leaving. Vince knew, for whatever reason, he couldn't pay Bret what he told him he could. And if he had the option to leave, and it was a great deal to work limited dates for good money, why not? Why not go and do it? We got to see, you know, inside the Hart house. We got to see Stu stretching some of the young recruits that he had. I mean, it was a really cool documentary. And then Vince even let their cameras in the day of Survivor Series. Didn't let them in the room where they were talking about the finish of the match, but Bret was wired. You can't tell me Vince and them didn't know he wasn't going to be wired. And you heard their conversation. You heard that they were going to work it out to be a schmoz, a no contest. And end up having a run-in by the Hart Foundation. And, Bret would keep his title, and he would turn it in the next day on Raw, and that would be it. That's what Bret wanted to do. Bret, as we all know, did not want to lose the title in Canada, in his home country, to Shawn Michaels, of all people, who he couldn't stand. We can go back and forth all day about what we would do if we were in that position. If you were in Bret's position, I mean, to me, it's like saying Shawn Michaels couldn't lose in San Antonio. Or honestly, Shawn Michaels couldn't lose to Bret Hart anywhere in the United States because that's his home country. Like, that's how ludicrous that sounds. Bret was labeled as an egomaniac because of that. And if you put yourself in Vince's shoes, what would you do if you're running a multi-billion dollar company? You're in the beginning of a Monday Night War. Eric Bischoff and Ted Turner, more so Eric Bischoff. Turner didn't really pay attention to what was going on. Eric Bischoff wanted to put the McMahon family out of business. He wanted to win the war and take out the competition. Eric Bischoff and Vince McMahon are a lot alike if you really break it down and compare the two. They have very, very similar visions, and they're both like-minded. which is funny, considering they butted heads for all those years. Vince felt like he had no choice. Brett was not willing to do business, so Vince had to make the decision to protect his company and to take the title off of Brett, whether he liked it or not. He didn't want to risk Bret Hart skipping town, going to WCW, and showing the WWF belt on WCW Nitro, similar to what Medusa Miceli did. Alundra Blaze took the women's championship and threw it in the trash live on Nitro. You couldn't risk your number one title being put on the opponent's television and treat it like it doesn't mean anything. Until you're in those people's shoes, until you're in Vince's shoes, having to deal with everything that's going on, you don't know how you'd react. You'd probably react the same way. I would have reacted the same way. Brett is an independent contractor. The lines are blurred when it comes to contractors, but in my experience in the transportation industry, if one of my drivers is an independent contractor, they refuse to do a load, that's fine. They have right of refusal. I don't know if the same rules apply to independent contractors in wrestling, but if Brett refused to do the job, that's his right. But it's Vince's company. He has the right to do whatever he feels right or whatever he feels is necessary. If you want to strip Brett of the kayfabe world title, I mean, it's not a real title. If you want to make a storyline change and take that belt off his wrestler, he has every right to do so. There's nothing Brett can do about it. Did Brett take it too personal? I think so. I honestly do. Again, if you listen to Bruce Pritchard, titles don't mean anything. It's the belt's just a prop. Do you want to be recognized as being the best in your industry, which the world champion could signify? Yeah, absolutely. 100%. But he's already the champion. He's already recognized as one of the best wrestlers in the world in professional wrestling. What did it matter to Brett if Vince took the title off of him or if he wanted Brett to lose? I can't tell you how many times champions or even non-champions, just wrestlers in general, when they are on the way out, if you go back to the old territory days, they do the job. They put that person they're wrestling over as they're leaving, as a show of respect and doing business the right way. As we'll hear here in a few minutes of what Vince McMahon had to say on the infamous Brett Screwed Brett promo, he'll say those very same things. It's a time-honored tradition for the champion or whomever to lose on their way out, to do the favors, to do the honors, to put that person over, to put the next person over is, you know, they want to be the leader of that company or that territory. That's just what you do. That's the way it's always been done. For Brett to say, I'm not losing to Sean in my home country, like it's a real sporting event, you know, like it's like saying, fuck, Tom Brady had to do the job to fucking Peyton Manning or whatever. He couldn't lose in Foxborough. I was like, it's not a fucking sport. It's wrestling. It's sports entertainment. You can't even make the correlation. If you did, it'd be illegal and it'd be point shavings and game, you know, games being thrown or whatever. Not to say it's never been done before, but you can't treat wrestling like an actual real sporting event because it's not. It's like another TV show. It's like any other comedy or drama or action movie or whatever. It's fucking sports entertainment. As much as we'd love to call wrestling a sport, which I do all the time, because, I mean, there are elements of sport in it. It's not a real legitimate contest to where anybody can win. It is a pre-planned, predetermined outcome. And the title belt is a prop. And wins and losses technically don't mean shit. I mean, they do in a sense that you don't ever want to be seen as losing all the time because the general population will never get behind you. They'll never buy your merchandise. They'll never support you. You'll never get a good or bad crowd reaction if they're just on the fence about you. So yeah, I mean, you don't want to be booked to lose all the time. But in the other sense, You're fucking leaving. Everybody knows it's the age of the internet at this point. The internet had just started. People are reading news websites. They're reading the dirt sheets. They know you're leaving. That crowd in Montreal knew he was leaving. Just lose. I know you can't stand Shawn Michaels, but you are paid to do a job. Whether you win or lose, that is your line of work. That is your job. If I told my boss, I'm not dispatching that. Fuck that. I don't like that guy. You know what happened to me? See you later, pal. So for Brett to say I'm not going to lose to Shawn Michaels is absolutely utterly ridiculous. And I don't even know how that could be defended, to be quite honest. You do your job the way you're supposed to do. The way he was instructed to do by the owner of the company. So did Brett take it too personally? I believe so.
RTW Rewind.
Let's hear what Vince McMahon had to say about all this. It was a week later on the November 17th episode of Monday Night Raw. Vince McMahon sat down with Jim Ross and had a conversation about what had taken place at the Survivor Series. Let's hear what Vince had to say.
Let's cut right to the chase. 7 days ago at the Survivor Series, did you or did you not screw Bret Hart?
Some would say, I screwed Bret Hart. Bret Hart would definitely tell you, I screwed him. I look at it from a different standpoint. I look at it from a standpoint of the referee did not screw Bret Hart. Shawn Michaels certainly did not screw Bret Hart. Nor did Vince McMahon screw Bret Hart. I truly believe that Bret Hart screwed Bret Hart. And he can look in the mirror and know that.
I'm sure in some parts of the country right now there's a collective groan that you're not accepting responsibility, that you orchestrated the situation, and the fact that people are not going to understand what you mean by Bret Hart screwed Bret Hart. So what do you mean by that?
Well, I will certainly take responsibility for any decision I've ever made. I've never had a problem doing that. Not that all of my decisions are accurate. They're not. But when I make a bad decision, I'm not above saying I'm sorry and trying to do the best about it that I can. Hopefully the batting average is pretty good. I make more good decisions than I do bad decisions. And as far as screwing Bret Hart is concerned, there's a time-honored tradition in the wrestling business that when someone is leaving, that they show the right amount of respect to the WWF superstars, in this case, who helped make you that superstar. You show the proper respect to the organization that helped you become who you are today. It's a time-honored tradition, and Bret Hart didn't want to honor that tradition. And that's something I would have never, ever expected from Bret, because he is known somewhat as a traditionalist in this business. It would have never crossed my mind that Bret would not have wanted to show the right amount of respect to the superstars who helped make him and the organization who helped make him what he is today. Nonetheless, that was Bret's decision. Bret screwed Bret.
Some folks along the internet know that in 1996, Bret signed a 20-year contract with the WWF. Then I'm sure there are some at home now. Some folks are saying, well, how could Bret Hart be? He's got 18 years left on the contract. How can he leave? Did Bret Hart ask you to leave the WWF? Or did you ask him to leave the WWF?
This was a joint decision, and it vacillated somewhat as well when we were making the decision. It was a joint decision from both Bret and me. And ultimately what happened was that the two of us got together and orchestrated the opportunity for Ted Turner's wrestling organization to, quote, steal Bret. I felt that for business reasons, if Bret Hart and the salary we were paying him was not justified. And Bret felt that for creative reasons, and in fact that he had become sort of second banana in his own mind to Shawn Michaels, who had, quote, stolen his spot. So for financial reasons on my part and creative reasons on Bret Hart's part, the two of us got together and decided, okay, let's do the very best we can for you, Bret. So the two of us orchestrated Bret Hart receiving a 3-year deal in which he is paid $3 million a year which I believe is the richest deal in all of professional wrestling. And that's working 125 days a year. So I felt, from a personal standpoint, that if Brett wasn't a great investment any longer for the WWF, although I really didn't want him to go, but nonetheless, that the least I could do for Brett is to help him help himself. And I told Brett, Brett, if in fact you do get this deal from Turner, I'm going to be the very first person personally to congratulate you. And I was. From a business standpoint, I didn't really want to lose Brett. He wasn't paying off from a financial standpoint, but nonetheless, I really didn't want to lose Brett.
Certainly the bitterness of the loss at the Survivor Series could never be more prevalent. He stands in the ring and he spits in your face. Shortly thereafter, he is destroying WWF television equipment. Were you prepared for what happened after the match?
I was disappointed in Brett when he hit me. Very disappointed. I sustained a concussion as a result of it, with the vision problems to this day. I'll get over it. And I didn't think it was the right thing to do. Brett seems to be crowing about that, that I've read, where, you know, he feels proud of striking me. And it wasn't a question of a confrontation, because even at 52 years old, I dare say that perhaps things would have been a little different if there were a confrontation. I allowed Brett to strike me. I had hoped that he wouldn't. I'd hoped that we could sit down and try and work things out as gentlemen. That's what I'd really hoped for, but that's not what happened.
Have you considered pressing charges or pursuing legal remedies for that situation in his locker room?
I have considered it. I think those options are still available. I'm not pursuing it at the moment. And I guess maybe it all depends on Brett as to whether or not I do.
If you were only a story writer,
mm-hmm.
and the Survivor Series was the final chapter in the life story of Bret Hart, the WWF years, how would you have preferred to write the final chapter?
As a storyteller, I would have hoped that Brett's story would be a dramatic one. I would hope that, that Brett's story would be one that would give him dignity, that would give him the poise to state that I was maybe the greatest WWF superstar ever in terms of his departure. And one way of being able to give back to the company, being able to give back to those individuals, those superstars who helped you achieve the level of success that you have, when you know that you're leaving in a time-honored tradition, might have been, for argument's sake, that after the most grueling match that Brett ever had in his life, that Brett was pinned. But in that small moment of defeat, Brett would have stood straight up and shown the whole world what a true champion, both as a human being and a wrestling persona, he really is. And if I had been Brett, if I were writing the story, I can see Brett, after a 1-2-3, simply saying, okay, to his opponent, you got the best of me. I want to congratulate you. I want to stick my hand out and congratulate you. And furthermore, I want everyone in the whole locker room to watch my match so that I can show for those who follow in my footsteps the way, in a time-honored tradition, this is to be done. To show every individual, every secretary, everyone in Titan Sports, the World Wrestling Federation, who counts on me to do the right thing, that I was there, that I was a superstar, maybe the greatest of ever, and I went out the way a true champion would go out.
Are you able to step back and objectively look at this thing and evaluate your friend, your perhaps former friend Bret Hart, the human being, and have sympathy for this man?
Sympathy? I have no sympathy for Bret whatsoever. None. I have no sympathy for someone who was supposed to be a wrestling traditionalist, not doing the right thing for the business that made him, not doing the right thing for the fans and the performers and the organization who helped make him what he is today. Bret made a very, very selfish decision. Bret's going to have to live with that for the rest of his life. Bret screwed Bret. I have no sympathy whatsoever for Bret.
I mean, can you argue with that? I believe 100% that was the real Vince McMahon speaking. That wasn't Mr. McMahon. In fact, Mr. McMahon hadn't even been born yet. This is kind of the promo that kicked all that off eventually. But I still believe that was 100% Vince McMahon speaking from his heart. And it's hard to argue about that, you know? I mean, saying that, you know, for Bret to only work 125 days for $3 million, I mean, why wouldn't he do it? But, you know, in the end, Bret didn't honor the time-honored tradition of losing on the way out, and he just couldn't afford to trust Bret. On Bret's side, and I know I said, did Bret take it a little too personally? Yes, he did. But if you put yourself in Bret Hart's shoes, he trusted Vince. He loved Vince McMahon. He said Vince McMahon was like a father to him, and his dad had betrayed him, especially when they agreed to a no contest and that he would drop the belt the next night on Raw, and that's the way they left things. Yeah, I could see how Bret would be a little bit pissed off after the fact, after Vince McMahon went back on what they said and did things his own way and didn't have enough balls or respect to clear it with Bret ahead of time. I get it. I do get why Bret felt that way. But in the end, like I said before, it's a work. No one's going to think anything less of Bret Hart as he goes off the WCW, especially dropping the title of Shawn Michaels, one of the greatest wrestlers in the world, and had been a main event talent at that point for several years. It's not like he was losing it to fucking Chains from the DOA, for Christ's sakes. He was losing it to the Heartbreak Kid, Shawn Michaels. The icon, the showstopper, the main event. Bret carried that on his back for many, many years. Even after getting injured in WCW by Goldberg, eventually having a stroke, you know, Vince McMahon actually called to check up on him. You know, they kind of mended fences a little bit by, you know, letting Bret do his own documentary, putting Bret in the Hall of Fame. But Bret was still pissed at Sean at that point. And Sean reportedly wasn't allowed to show up at that Hall of Fame ceremony, or he had to leave before Bret came out, or whatever the story was. But eventually, things blew over. Shawn Michaels obviously got hurt in 1998 and had to leave the business for several years. When he came back, WWE ran a television show called WWE Confidential, and it may have even been the first episode, but Shawn Michaels was on and was asked if he was in on what happened, and he said, yeah, I was, after denying it for so many years. Even the own, you know, the cameraman on Wrestling with Shadows, you know, was backstage asking Shawn Michaels after the match, you know, did you know anything about this? And I swear to God, Bret, I had no idea. I swear to God. I promise you, I didn't know. Lying through his teeth. Shawn, you know, told the truth many, many years later. what are you going to do? Shawn was the company guy. Shawn was the one staying. Shawn had to carry the belt and toe the line as a champion. And he did what his boss told him to do. He denied it. But for Sean to come all those years later and say that, yeah, I did it. Sorry, Bret. I'm sure Bret didn't, I'm sure Bret knew deep down. But Triple H knew about it too. Triple H lied to Bret's wife. They were all in on it. They had to be. Feel bad for Earl Hebner, who claimed that he never wanted to do it. But again, he was a company guy too, and he did it. Pat Patterson regrets doing it, but Pat was a lifer. You hear stories about Undertaker not knowing what was going on and was legit pissed off. And was looking for some heads. Some heads were going to roll. You didn't fuck with Mark Calloway back in the day or ever, really, but he was legit pissed off. Bruce Pritchard told a hilarious story about that on Something to Wrestle With. So, you know, up over the years, this was so built up, and people had their conspiracy theories, and I can see why, especially with Bret Hart's film crew being there and Vince allowing them, you know, to record up until that event and even that day of the event and even the aftermath. And he let, you know, Bret release that. Was it a work? Were Vince and Bret and Sean and everybody all in on this at the same time? Did they work the boys? Did they work all of us? Possible. There could be a case made for that. I can believe some of that. When this happened, we didn't know what to think. And then, you know, watching Vince McMahon pretty much say Bret screwed Bret, we're like, wow, like this is real life. This isn't just a storyline anymore. We bought it hook, line, and sinker back then. Maybe that was the point. Did they do a good enough job to make everybody believe that that was real, that was legit? Sure as hell did. Could it have been a work? It's wrestling. You never know. I'll never, ever say never in wrestling. Ever. It could have been a work.
RTW Rewind.
Thankfully, many, many years later, to pop a pretty good rating, when TNA Impact decided they wanted to go head-to-head with WWE on Monday nights with Eric Bischoff and Hulk Hogan at the helm, bringing in other members of the NWO, Shawn Michaels and Bret Hart had a reunion live on Raw the same night. Here's what took place.
I got 12 years of things that I've wanted to get off my chest. And the very first thing I want to do is I want to call back there and ask Shawn Michaels to come out here and see me face to face.
Whoa. The Hitman not wasting any time. And there's Shawn Michaels, who's always been in the eye of the storm, and of course he was 12 years ago at Survivor Series. And I can tell you, King, this is the first time since November of 1997 that Shawn Michaels will have had any contact at all with Bret Hart.
I think I'd like to take this opportunity right now to bury the hatchet with you and call for a truce.
You deserved what happened 12 years ago in Montreal. You disrespected me, and you disrespected this business. And yes, I did have a hand in what Vince McMahon did that night. Rest my case. And there's a part of me, there's a big part of me that doesn't regret a bit of it. There's another part of me that knows that in the last 12 years, a lot of things have changed. A lot of things in my life have changed. When I think of Bret Hart, I think of the excellence of execution. You're not the only one that wants to bury the hatchet. I guess all I have to say is, are you sure? And are you ready?
My career and your career shouldn't always be tagged by what happened at Survivor Series. I had a great career. You've had a great career. We both accomplished so many things. I think it's as good a time as any right here and now for you and me to take this opportunity in front of all these fans right here in Dayton and all around the world to look each other in the eye and take this moment and say that we could be friends. So I offer my hand to you in friendship right here in front of everybody, right from the heart, right from the bottom of my heart. I call for a truce, and I call for you to shake my hand, and if you want to bury the hatchet, let's bury it right now.
Was right in the world again. I mean, I tuned in. Screw Impact. I don't care what's going on over there. I was definitely watching this first. There was no way I was going to miss that. And as a Shawn Michaels fan for all these years, it was kind of cool to see them bury the hatchet, which, you know, supposedly, if you believe this was a legitimate situation and it wasn't a work, it was cool to see that. But, you know, several in the business have believed it was a work. Even Sean's own friends, Kevin Nash and Scott Hall and Road Dogg, thought it could have been a work. They've gone on record to say that they thought it was all fixed. Legendary journalists from the Pro Wrestling Illustrated magazines, Bill Apter, thought it was a work. Bam Bam Bigelow, Chris Kanyon, Steve Corino, Tony Mamaluke, Justin Credible, Paul Bearer, Sonny, Chris Candido, Jerry Lawler. There's so many people that the Road Warriors, Demolition, Steve Blackman. I mean, the list goes on and on. Sean Waltman all thought it could have been a work. 2019, the referee Earl Hebner was asked about it, asked if it was a work and if he was in on it, if he thought it was a work. And he said, yeah, I really do. I'm not going to lie about it anymore. Jerry Lawler thought it was plausible that Hart was working with McMahon. Teddy Hart, Bret Hart's nephew, also said that same thing. Sean Waltman, who is, you know, friends with Brett and Sean, you know, was bewildered as to how Brett couldn't have seen that coming from a million miles away and felt that there was a high possibility of the incident being a work. And Waltman said that Hart wouldn't have told anybody, including his wife, about his involvement, and deduced, I think, the screw job was so compartmentalized that the guys were in on it didn't even know who else was, and they had to kayfabe everybody. The PW Torch, led by Wade Keller, reported that outside the business, many wrestling fans believe that the screw job could have been a work. I mean, the thought has crossed my mind as well. It's such an intriguing situation, and we've heard all sides of the story, but I just want to give you my account of what I witnessed and what I felt like when I watched it. And I'll never, ever forget, you know, seeing that live on pay-per-view. It was an amazing thing. But you decide for yourselves, you know, given all the information that we know, trying to put two and two together, was this a legitimate situation in which tempers got out of control and feelings got hurt? Or was this literally the greatest angle and the greatest work in the history of the professional wrestling business? You make that call. That'll wrap it up for this edition of RTW Rewind, guys. If you want to follow me on Twitter, I am at RadRobGaming. Check me out on Twitch, twitch.tv/RadRobGaming, streaming every Tuesday night at 6 p.m. Central and every Sunday afternoon at 2 in the afternoon. And check out my YouTube gaming page called RadRobGaming. If you want to follow the show on Twitch, we are at RadTurtlesPOD. You can send us an email, RadTurtlesWrestling@gmail.com, facebook.com/RadTurtlesWrestling. Leave us a like there and follow our company Twitter page at RR Pod Network. I'll be back on Saturday for the flagship giving you the good, the bad, and the ugly from this week's TV. Polyester, the Evil Taylor, be back with the Imbecile of the Week, and I'll cover all of your current news to get you up to date. Until then, guys, hope you enjoyed this episode. Thanks for all your support, and we'll see you in the next one. Take care.
Thanks again for listening to this episode. You can follow RTW on Twitter at RadTurtlesPod, and you can email the show at RadTurtlesWrestling@gmail.com. We appreciate all of your support. You've been listening to RTW Rewind, exclusively here on the R&R Podcast Network.